with workers' blood. The mistakes of the bosses we must pay for. From the cities to the farmlands and trenches full of mud. 'Cause war has always been the boss's way, sir. Come on!
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So yesterday we talked about the three cases being taken up by the Supreme Court. And again, immediately as I'm looking at these arbitration agreements, these forced, really not agreements, these forced arbitration stuff, I'm harking back to the past. And the idea of, are we going to see things like yellow dog contracts come back where the employer says, you want a job? The only way that I'm willing to hire you, sign this contract, that you'll never join a union, you'll never do any of the things that I find, well, despicable, like asking for raises or any of that stuff. And if you ever do any of those things, you'll be fired. And having a legal structure that says, okay, that's a huge concern for me. So when I saw these three cases come up, I go, you know, this is something we've got to delve into, which is why I've asked Paul Segunda, professor of law and the director of the Labor and Employment Law Program at Marquette University, to come talk with us. Paul, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So I'm looking at these three cases, and am I going too far with this? Am I in my fear that potentially we could end up back in the past?
Well, legally, yes, you're going too far, but practically, no, you're not going too far. Because legally, you have a right to join and organize and insist in organizing a union under Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act, which applies to all companies of a certain size in the private sector. So if they wrote a contract like that actually formally, then it would be unlawful under the National Labor Relations Act. But practically speaking, even if they don't write a contract like that, and now they do something to you, let's say it costs you $70, let's say it costs you $250, it doesn't make sense to bring an individual lawsuit when you're talking about that kind of money.
Right.
But if you're doing it to 100 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people, you can't bring a class action. So really, it makes it almost impossible to, you know, work together to you know, make a difference in your workplace.
Now, I mean, I look at this, and again, all of these arbitration clauses, I have a huge problem with, because, as you've said, you know, you can't really, the court has decided we really can't band together if we've been cheated on small amounts, or if we've been, you know, wronged in small ways, that you're not going to spend the thousands of dollars to fight in court.
Correct. And just to let the listeners know what's at stake here, you have a clash between two statutes. On the one hand, you have the Federal Arbitration Act, which was passed in 1925. It was had nothing to do with employment law when it was passed. The legislative history is absolutely clear. And then you have the National Labor Relations Act, the Wagner Act, which was passed in 1935. And what the Supreme Court is going to possibly do is basically say the FAA, the Federal Arbitration Act, trumps, sorry to use that word, I know that's bad language, but supersedes the National Labor Relations Act. So even though you have these rights under the labor law to engage in concerted activity for mutual aid and protection to improve your workplace, sorry, the arbitration law is more important, and so you can't bring a class action, you can't bring litigation together in order to improve your workplace. That's what we're worried about. That's what we're worried that, especially if a ninth justice, a conservative justice is appointed, that's what they're going to hold.
And, you know, as I talked about this yesterday, that's really the main concern in my view, that we undo the NLRA, that, look, I mean, we've had, you know, 70 years of attacking the NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act, and 70 years of ossification of labor law against workers. And I look at this as just another one of those death of a thousand paper cuts, if you will.
Absolutely. And again, for the listeners, remember, this is not just about unions and traditional labor law. We're talking about the overtime regulations being pushed back under the Fair Labor Standards Act. We're talking about fiduciary protections for workers with retirement plans. Those conflict of interest rules are going to be rolled back. You have a labor nominee who's the head of a fast food company who's been sued for million dollars worth of violations of federal labor and employment law. I mean, it couldn't be any worse.
And a guy who said that workers are overprotected in this country.
Overprotected, and that he likes people who can be replaced by machines and equipment.
I mean, we're really moving, and I talk about this quite often, Paul, that we're moving back to the days of the Lochner era, where if you're desperate enough, if you're hungry enough, if your children are hungry enough, that you're willing to work in deplorable conditions for poverty wages, well, that's your choice, buddy, because we're hearing the same frames. Back then, it was liberty of contract. Today, we're hearing freedom of contract. It's the same poison. It's the same nonsense, and it's the same desperate class wages that we had back then.
Yeah, and in fact, the way I put it is we have lost collective bargaining and we're back to collective begging.
Exactly. And
with collective begging, what you get are low wages, no benefits. Do you know, Rick, that a large percentage of the workforce now is either part-time, independent contractors, per diem, temporary, leased? They have no rights because in order to have rights under labor and employment law, you have to be considered an employee. And being an employee is a legal classification.
And this is one of those things, Paul, that I don't think the average person gets in the big picture, but they're suffering under exactly what you're talking about, the misclassification, the part-time employment, and then with all of the problems that come with that of being disposable. And I think that's part of the anger that we saw in this last election, that people are, they're working harder, they're working more, but they're working harder and longer for less and less, and their lives aren't getting better.
Right. It's the commodification of labor. And the richer are getting richer and the poorer are getting poorer. And there's anger and frustration. And they're looking for any solution. And they're even willing to elect someone who literally hates them, who's a billionaire, you know, who's a fraud, who hates them. And yet that's who they want to be their savior because they don't know what else to do anymore.
No.
They're running out of patience.
And as I've said for years, Paul, I mean, the one avenue that working people have to improve their lot in this world, the one path towards that promise that if you work hard and play by the rules, you get ahead, is organizing, is collective action, is unionizing, is people coming together and fighting for better wages, hours, and conditions. This isn't new stuff, is it?
Not new, and you're absolutely correct. If you think that all those statutes are going to protect you, you know, Title VII, the Fair Labor Standards Act, the National Labor Relations Act, keep in mind they only apply to you if you're an employee. And if you're not an employee, if your employer like Uber or Lyft or TaskRabbit, you know, the gig economy, considers you an independent contractor, you get none of it. So what you need to do is you need to organize and you have to put unions together to demand that you be treated like employees and then demand that you get basic job security, safety and health, and other terms and conditions of employment that a dignified worker deserves.
I mean, and again, you go back to, you know, what you just said, you know, the idea of having safe working conditions and having, you know, some bit of security, and not to mention, you know, health insurance, unemployment, workers' comp, you know, all of those things that the gig economy, the misclassified employee gets cheated out of. To have those things, there's got to be a way to organize together. And I'm looking at the number one priority that Republicans have shown us since taking absolute control, and it's pursuing this no rights at work agenda. And like in Kentucky, the right to work law, New Hampshire, Missouri, other states are pushing this poison. That taking of power away from workers is their number one priority.
Yeah, and they're making misnomers. They're using terminologies like right to work. There's no such thing as a right to work in the Constitution or in any laws. All that is the right not to pay dues to the union who are providing services to you. It's allowing people to be free riders and allowing them to basically take away the union's property without compensation, which is why there's a number of lawsuits in my own state of Wisconsin, in West Virginia right now, that is saying that you can't force a union to provide services to workers, whether it be collective bargaining, whether it be processing their grievance. You can't force the union to do that for free. That's the government, through law, forcing the union to provide services without compensation. That is a violation of the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, which is a taking without just compensation.
Right. And I've used that on conservatives a lot, and they they don't seem to care that, and they don't seem to reciprocate. I've asked, you know, small business owners. I go, well, I'd like to take this stuff that you have here on the shelf and not pay you for it. Are you okay with that? And they're not.
Right.
And I'm going, but why is it okay on this other side?
Exactly. And why is it okay that corporations can spend obscene amounts of money to get their, you know, chosen candidates elected or not elected? You should have seen the campaign in Wisconsin here to keep Russ Feingold out of the Senate and to get Ron Johnson put in there, you know, the Koch brother crony. It's remarkable. Unions are limited in their ability to spend money, but corporations are people who have no limitation.
And never die.
And never die, unfortunately. These corporations go on for hundreds of years.
But, you know, here again, I look at, you know, at all of this stuff that we know is coming, Paul. And the question that I keep coming back to is, you know, where do we go from here? We know that the right to work poison is going to be, you know, pushed into the veins of workers and more states. We know that there's going to be an attack on the NLRA. We know that there's going to be an anti-labor secretary who's going to use the department as a bludgeon. So I keep coming back to, what do we do? And I keep only coming back to, our workers need to get more militant. We need to be, maybe it's the 1930s again.
Well, you're preaching to the choir, Rick, because I completely agree. The ultimate power that workers have is their own labor. And especially in the public sector, when they came and took away all the public sector rights of Wisconsin public workers, I argued that they should shut down the government. I said, if they're not going to be paid, you know, whether it be teachers or whether it be other types of municipal workers, they should shut down the government. Well, it's the same thing with private sector. You know, if you organize and you want to hurt the large companies that are doing this to their workers, whether it be the McDonald's or whether it be the Walmarts of the world, then you have to take away their ability to do their business. Workers still, at the end of the day, have the ultimate power. It's all about solidarity. And what I'm hoping is that because things are going to become so awful over the next few years with the Republicans completely in control for your average worker, that finally people are going to say enough is enough. They're going to combine together. They're going to engage in massive acts of solidarity, and they're going to shut things down unless they're treated with respect and dignity.
Yeah, I've been saying for a while, you know, maybe we need to have that pain, and maybe we only act in our best interest when our bellies are empty and we're suffering.
Absolutely, and we are about to suffer. I'm sorry to say that, but, you know, just, you know, with grizzly bears coming into our schools that we need guns for and other problems like that, we are suffering even before this guy has been even inaugurated. I mean, this is, I don't think people understand, and especially for those listeners out there who voted for Trump, I understand your pain, I understand your agony, but you have no idea what you've put into power. Yep. It is going to be remarkable.
And they want to undo the entire 20th century and all of the New Deal protections for working people and go back to the days of desperation. Last question I've got for you on this. You know, in looking at these cases, right now it's a 4-4 court. I don't see this moment it going through. When Trump appoints the next or nominates the next and the Senate immediately confirms the next Supreme Court justice, are these three cases something that person will immediately sit on?
Well, first of all, I don't know if there's going to be an immediate confirmation. I do know that the Democrats are planning to filibuster. The big question is whether or not they will get rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominations. That's the one filibuster that still exists. And Republicans better be careful, because the day will come, of course, when we will be able to put ultra liberals and other types of progressives on the Supreme Court. So I'm not sure it's going to be such a quick thing. Remember, they held up, you know, the nominee of President Obama for 9 months. I'm personally hoping that the Democrats play hardball and the Republicans, you know, think hard about whether or not to push through this nominee. So there is a chance that the nominee will not sit on these cases. If they do sit on these cases, you better believe that one of their bona fides is going to be pro-employer and anti-worker, and they will certainly be the fifth vote to allow these class action waivers to go through and these arbitration clauses.
Wow. Again, you know, another reason that this election was just so bad. I hope you're right. I hope the Democrats do find their spine and steal that said spine. But I also think that the Republicans are going to go nuclear and ram through their agenda. But we shall see.
Well, Paul, one last question, Rick. Are your studio doors locked? Because I know there's grizzlies in your part of the country.
Called the school today to ask and make sure they had the grizzly fences up.
Great. Awesome.
Thanks so much, Paul. Great talking with you.
Okay.
Always great. Paul Segunda, professor of law there at Marquette, also the labor and employment law program director. Quick break, right back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. Well, working people come to talk.
I'm fighting till the end, and we're not gonna break tonight, and we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town, all down the line. This is a union town, a union town, all down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union town, all down the line.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg.